Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's move on and continue the conversation, but now from more of a legal perspective, we have a missing girl, a body in the trunk of a Tesla, and a rising music star at the center of it all. Right now, no one has been charged. The cause of death, it's still pending, but questions are stacking up about timeline, silence, and whether justice is coming at all. As you heard Jennifer Coffendaffer recently say, this thing, we may not know exactly what was the cause of death. That's the medical examiner. I'm kind of paraphrasing that. Today, now we're going to be joined by criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis to unpack the legal fault lines in this case involving Celeste Rivas Hernandez and the artist known as David. So let's start here. I know you've been watching this thing. What does the law see here? And more importantly, what are we still waiting for in terms of charges legally against somebody?
Yeah, Tony, I think the law sees a lot of holes so far in this case, based largely on how things went down and the possible timeline. Like you said, that there hasn't been a cause of death determined. There hasn't been a manner of death determined. In terms of, you know, the prosecution, that they need probably to have something along those lines from a coroner, a medical examiner, saying how this person perished. Otherwise, we're potentially looking at charges for actions taken after her demise, which would be much less serious.
Much less serious, but I mean, it's serious nonetheless. You got a body in the trunk of the car that you own. But if you were to go in and press charges, you certainly would want those to stick. What are the risks of if they were to go in and just theoretically charge David for, you know, having a body dismembered in the trunk of his car? And that's, you know, whatever charge that technically would be. What are the risks of jumping in with that right now without anything beyond that?
You know, it's problematic in part because the charges would probably be something like abuse of a corpse or concealment or obstruction of an investigation, something along those lines. And while those, like you said, are serious, probably in the felony neighborhood, they're not homicide. Mm-hmm. Now, if they did charge this soon, one concern is that they would have much less access to David. David would either hire his own attorney or be appointed one. And from there, you can't talk to him directly. You can't interview him. And so a number of hurdles would pop up if there was a charge at this sort of preemptive stage.
But aren't those hurdles already there? He has started hiring some high power attorneys to represent him at this point.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there are a number of hurdles in this case that could make things more difficult, but they're already extremely difficult for the prosecution. It's a huge uphill battle. How in the world did this poor young girl's body get into this vehicle and in the condition that it was in when it was found? All of these are really important questions for which I haven't seen any reports showing answers.
Is there a level of concern about liability for the LAPD if they were to go in too quick, really with anything, because of the nature of the case, because of the nature of how high profile it is? If this were David without a four in the middle of where the A is supposed to be, and it was just, you know, David Jones down the road that really, you know, works at the defunct family video, would he be arrested by now, or are they being more cautious because of the nature of this, do you think?
I think that's a good insight, Tony. I think they are being more cautious. Now, oftentimes the prosecution has significant immunity when it comes to charging decisions. And if they got something wrong, they got it wrong. And oftentimes a lay person, a regular David, might not have the resources to pursue the government for their errors. Here, we have this superstar who purportedly has significant resources. So any misstep on behalf of the police would be scrutinized by his legal team, and they would look for exceptions to that immunity, and there are exceptions to potentially go after the police if the police do charge him and get it wrong.
I wonder if I'm about to ask a really obscure question, but how many, and you may not know the answer to this, but how many times does law enforcement come across a body in a trunk, do you think? I mean, this seems unusual, but maybe this is a fairly common occurrence.
Bodies come up in the most unexpected of places sometimes. You know, when I was a prosecutor, we would go out on death calls where there was a body that was in an apartment and it appeared to have been there for weeks or even potentially more than a month. Oftentimes bodies surface in bodies of water, things like that. You know, sometimes they are found in places where unhoused people congregate and that kind of thing. So, yeah, coming across a body is not unusual, even in circumstances where it's in a car or some other locale, not uncommon at all.
I mean, right now we have a body in a trunk. We have a dismemberment of a body. Whoever did this, there are certainly charges to be made for something here. I mean, what sort of charges would we be looking at right now before they can even get to the area of possibly murder? And might we never even get to murder if there's not enough evidence that points to murder?
You know, some of those charges could include, we look at the Robert Durst case, which is a very publicized case. There was an HBO documentary on it. Mm-hmm. He was charged with murder and with dismemberment of a body, or I'm not even sure if he was charged with the dismemberment itself, but really the only thing that they could prove was his actions after the individual died. And so here, some of those charges that could come up for actions post-death are abuse of corpse, or the California equivalent, obstruction of investigation, because you're essentially trying to hide evidence, potentially destruction of evidence. Those things can come up. Sometimes the investigation doesn't elucidate how the victim died. And when you don't have that information, sometimes you only can go on what happened after the fact that you can prove. And so we may not even see some kind of murder investigation, and we don't even know for sure that it was a murder at this point.
Yeah. No, I mean, what does it tell you when the medical examiner comes out just as the other day and says, we may never know the actual cause of death?
I think that's kind of telegraphing for the public, like, hey, all eyes are on this case. The public wants justice. They want to know what happened to this poor girl. And I think the medical examiner is sort of priming them for a possible future revelation that, hey, not only do we not know the cause of death, but without that critical predicate fact, which is almost necessary in most homicide investigations, we might not even get to the homicide phase or a homicide charge. And I think they're sort of softening the blow of that preemptively by this statement.
I mean, does that tell us that there is nothing in the toxicology? Does that tell us that there's no visible, you know, wounds to what is left of the corpse that, that could be attributed directly to death, like there's not a, a bullet in the head or things of that nature that would be conclusively tied to a homicide or an intentional homicide of some sort, or even a suicide, maybe.
You know, the medical examiner has an incentive to come forward with any inculpatory evidence, incriminating evidence that it might have about how that this person died. And so when they come forward and say, hey, we don't really have anything to give you, that tells me they didn't find any significant evidence of strangulation. They didn't find evidence of a gunshot wound. They didn't find conclusive evidence of a stabbing or something like that. They probably didn't find evidence of a poisoning or of a drug overdose. Otherwise, the toxicology report may have revealed that and they may have reported that. So them being this tight-lipped about it kind of tells me that, unfortunately, they might have nothing at this point.
Boy, that's disturbing. But again, I go back to the Ellen Greenberg case, you know. So, yes, I want to believe the medical examiner. I really do. But are they trying to hide something? And I'm not saying that they are. But I just, there's always this now element of, I question things and I never questioned before. So I don't know.
Stacey, I think you're right to do that. You know, we've had several cases come forward where the medical examiner either doesn't have an answer or the answer they initially give is it appears to be wrong, like in the Ellen Greenberg case. And so I think there's more scrutiny upon medical examiners to look at what they're doing, look at what their findings are, how they conducted their analysis, what their conclusions might be, and how valid those conclusions are. And I think it's important to kind of pick that apart. And you know, is it at least possible that they got it wrong, that they missed something? Could there be a second autopsy, even from defense? There could. So this might not be the last word on the medical examination of Celeste's body.
How difficult is it to determine if there was some sort of physical altercation or some sort of physical trauma to a body that would have caused death when the body is literally in pieces?
It's incredibly hard because not only is the body itself disjointed, but on top of that, it is eroded, it is decomposed. There might have been biological signs that may not exist anymore. For example, there could have been DNA transfer from the culprit, but some of that could have eroded such that it is no longer testable. You know, they need to, of course, look under the fingernails of Celeste if they can, that they need to look at any sort of bruising that appears unnatural, but that's going to be really hard because of the state the body was in when they found
it. When you see that this body was, you know, literally in the trunk of his, or his frunk of his car, on a busy road, obviously it's going to get towed at some point, and it did. What does that tell you about whoever did this? I mean, is that screaming, catch me? And I'm not saying it's David who did it, but whoever did it screaming, catch me? Or is this just utter stupidity of not thinking, you know, one step ahead, that you put a body in a frunk of a car and you leave it on the road for a handful of days, the car's going to get towed at some point?
You'd think.
Legally, I think there are multiple possible interpretations. One possible interpretation is that David was, a young guy. He was 20 or so, and he was dumb, and he wasn't thinking about the consequences. He was going on tour. He's obsessed with his other life, and he just sort of made a really stupid mistake by putting this serious evidence in his vehicle. That's one. A second possible interpretation is that someone was trying to frame David and say that, hey, look how obvious it is. There's this dead body in the star's car, must be him, go after him and leave me alone. A third potential interpretation is that there was just, some sort of incompetence on behalf of whoever was involved in this. And they, maybe they're in Ecuador now, who knows? So there's a number of ways that this can be read, none of which are very clear, none of which are very helpful for the prosecution.
It seems highly unlikely to me that it was David that put the body in the trunk or in the frunk of the car.
It's too obvious.
So what my mind goes to is a fixer. of, you know, he's got the money, he's got his posse, he's got his group, and, you know, and they all seem to be, for the most part, fairly young and inexperienced in life. I'm wondering if, like, he had his fixer, you know, that has never had to fix anything like this before, but, you know, also young and dumb and understanding that they do chalk the tires of cars on streets and do tow them, but being young and dumb, maybe completely unaware of this little factoid, considering they've only been driving for about 4 years of their lives.
Right.
So it's, it makes me wonder if just, if there were other people involved in this, how many people were involved in this in terms of trying to cover this up? Does this scream to you like this is some sort of evil, maniacal, we got to kill her and hide the body? Or is it like, shit, something happened, now we got to, you know, cover this shit, a la Weekend at Bernie's, but in a really bad way?
Yeah, my read on it, and this is just speculation at this point, just my opinion, is that it looks to me like there was something horrible that happened. I don't know if this was an accident, a drug overdose, a domestic violence issue that got worse. Something horrible happened. And then folks sort of scrambled to say, God, what can we do about this? Well, if we dismember her, maybe it'll be more difficult for the police to conduct an analysis. And I don't know where else to put her in this busy, congested LA city. Perhaps we just hide her in the frunk of this car for the moment and cross our fingers and try to come up with a different plan. No other plan arose. And here we are. That's kind of my take. But again, that's just my opinion.
Sorry, Tony.
Go ahead. I wonder if I watched a little too much Scooby-Doo here, but I just feel like this is so freaking obvious that to me, it feels like somebody is trying to frame him for this, that maybe he was getting too popular and becoming too much of a threat. So I'm trying to create like some musical competition here. I feel like this is so freaking obvious. Why would you hide a body in your own car? What, I mean, go rent a car, go steal a car, go dump it in the...
Don't put a body in a car.
Well, go put it in the woods or something. Go dump it in a river. There's so many options. Why put it in that car that's registered to him? So to me, it just seems like Shaggy and Scooby need to come up with a different version of this. It doesn't feel right. Something just seems too obvious.
Oh, totally. And no, I hear you, Stacey. And, you know, thinking about, hey, if there was something else going on, you know, my understanding is Celeste was unfortunately kind of a wayward teen for whatever reason. And sometimes you come in contact with some unsavory folks and perhaps something happened and those unsavory folks knew she had a connection with David. Well, hey, what's a really good way to get the heat off of us? Let's put it on somebody else.
Correct.
You know, breaking into a car is not terribly hard. There are ways that this could have been done in a frame job, and someone else is the culprit, and David is getting the heat now. That's a possibility.
Let's say
that's where I'm leaning. That's just I'm looking at everything that everybody is saying, and I just feel like this is somebody who has a vendetta against him somehow, for some reason that we don't know. And it just let's get the pressure off of us, just like you said, Eric. Let's put it on someone else. It's going to take the attention away from us.
Let's say it's all young and dumb. Let's say it was panic. It was frantic. We don't know what to do. And they're all, you know, and it was an accident or it was an overdose or something of that nature. And they're trying to cover it up for whatever reason there may be. And there does seem to be plenty of reason to not put this young girl in the presence of David in any sort of legal standpoint, considering the age difference. Let's say it is all that. There wasn't a murder. Is that sellable? Is that something that how would that be looked at from a legal standpoint?
Yeah, you know, it reminds me again of the Bob Durst case where he allegedly had an altercation with like a roommate or someone who was living in his apartment complex. Robert Durst says it was self-defense, and then Robert Durst kills him and dismembers his body, and then argued to the jury that, hey, Robert Durst, there was this horrible thing that happened. It was self-defense. Robert Durst didn't know what to do. He may have exercised bad judgment, but that's not the same as being guilty of killing this person. So there are arguments that can be made, even if there was some involvement after the fact with her body. And so, yeah, even though it's not a warm and fuzzy type of argument to be made, it's something that defense sometimes has to do, and jurors have been receptive to it in the past.
How missing do you think she actually was? Because now the timeline kind of got, you know, a bomb mm-hmm. thrown into it just the other day of, oh, she's been missing for a year. I mean, and again, we got to run this through the prism of what's been reported, what's officially been said, and what reality may be that just has not come out into the public sphere yet. But she was reported missing on April 5th. And then 5 months later, she's caught on her security camera at the house where she was reported missing from, arguing with the neighbors. Now, Koff and Daffer kind of explained that a bit, too, of like, yeah, when they're reported missing and they're found or they show back up, you don't necessarily, you know, have a found report that gets filed. But I guess, you know, I'd be really curious to know what the hell's going on with her family or not going on with her family for this to be out there that she's been missing. But was she really missing, or was it just, you know, she kind of did whatever the hell she wanted to do and there really were no guardrails for this young woman? Or maybe there were guard. I don't know. Maybe it was just a really bad home. I have no idea, because obviously she was a runaway many a time. So there's many a reasons for that.
Totally. You know, I think missing might be kind of a misnomer in this case, because, you know, she was there. There's evidence that she's not, you know,
not missing.
Her whereabouts are not completely unknown. They were known by some at least 5 months after the date that she was reported missing. You know, it seemed like she was kind of a runaway minor at the time. And unfortunately, that happens all the time in every significant city in America. So, you know, the fact that she was a runaway usually means she's looking for a place to stay. She's looking for resources. She's looking for support. And unfortunately, those poor young folks can fall into some pretty ominous hands under those circumstances. I fear that may have happened to Celeste.
Right now, David has said nothing. As a defense attorney, would you advise him just to stay silent right now, or does silence start to hurt your case at some point?
You know, if I was his counsel, I would absolutely recommend that he continue to not make any sort of statement to the government, not subject himself to some kind of interview. He's already in a decent legal position as it is, because he has at least an alibi in terms of when her body was found. He was out on tour. Mm-hmm. What I might do, though, is defense can always issue a statement. They can issue a statement to the government. They can issue a statement publicly. It can be very brief. It can say, hey, David is, devastated by the loss of Celeste here, but had nothing to do with her demise and was out of the country when her body was found. It could be as easy as that. But even if you do that, you're admitting some association with Celeste while she was a minor. So there are pitfalls there too. It might be best to just kind of clam up and say, hey, government, it's your job to prove this. Have at it. And it seems like they can't so far.
The reality is, though, we know there was a relationship there of some sort. We don't know the nature of it. But we have video of them, you know, on live streams together. There's video of her, in different places. And it's established there's a relationship there. We don't know if it was sexual. I think that is still very much up in the air. I think that's very much up for question. I think a lot of people want to jump to conclusions, but until we actually have something definitive, we have no idea. We don't. Everybody hears a case like this and they want to jump to it's another R. Kelly. Maybe, or maybe not at all. We have no idea as of right now. All that being said, and we don't know those answers, when they're trying to figure out what's going on here and what sort of charges can be brought. What are they going to be looking for in terms of defining some of this to go forward to do whatever they're going to do? Eventually, somebody's, I would think, would need to be charged here.
Well, certainly the medical examiner is going to try and analyze whether there was any evidence of sexual activity. Now, perhaps the body was in such a state that that analysis is futile. On top of that, they're going to look at the digital footprint, Tony. Like you said, that there are, you know, Discord chats and certain videos that appear to some to show Celeste and David together. They're going to look at text messages. They're probably doing a search warrant for David's phone if they haven't already. In fact, I think they have. But they're going to look at all of that digital evidence. They're probably going to look at any prior location of Celeste's devices, if they can, try to triangulate those with cell phone towers, determine where she was on specific days throughout this duration during which she was allegedly missing. So there's a lot they can still try to put together to recreate this history between David and Celeste. We know there is something there. We just don't know what it is.
Is he missing a window here? Because, you know, we don't want to, or he wouldn't, legally, it's not in his best interest to be connected with a minor for obvious reasons. But if there is nothing going on here, is he missing his window here, PR-wise, public-wise? If he did not have anything to do with her death, to get to his fans, to get to the public and play that part of the game, because just letting it go to the public, you know, he'll be Jeffrey Dahmer in a week or two, the way the public goes with rumors and such. And you, at some point, I think you want to get ahead of that, to try and steer the narrative in some direction. Hopefully you're doing it honestly, but obviously people do steer it in other ways. But is this a missing opportunity at this moment in time to speak to the public in some sort of way?
Tony, there's surely a concern that the social narrative about what happened or what possibly happened could work to the detriment of David in terms of his professional interests. So, yeah, it would make sense if he wanted to get ahead of it and say, hey, we had, if this is true, a platonic relationship. Keep in mind, David wasn't some 40-year-old guy. He was like 20 at the
20,
time.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for him to be platonic friends with someone younger, whether it's appropriate or not, it's a different question.
Sure.
But on the flip side, you know, his Spotify ratings and listenership has exploded. He's received a lot of attention and arguably some professional benefits from this entire situation, as grotesque as that might be to look at it that way.
Yeah.
So perhaps keeping the mystery going and having this sort of intrigue in some perverse way could serve his professional interests.
All you gotta do is put a body in your trunk and boom, you get the listens.
Well, I was just gonna say, is this a new marketing challenge?
Oh, God. I think, yeah.
Do I need to leave now? Should I show myself out?
R. Kelly, I think his music, like Spike, Michael Jackson's, you see this in cases like, yes. And then it drops usually dramatically. It's like a woo, and then And I think some of that just comes too from, obviously, R. Kelly and Michael Jackson are very different caliber artists than David was. But I would imagine in some cases like this, it's more so, you know, folks over the age of 30 going, who the hell's David?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like,
people
what is
were
this?
Just doing that with Bad Bunny, too. So I don't know what a Bad Bunny is what I was hearing. So, yeah, that happens. Yeah.
So, I don't know. You may have some of that. One more question on this one before we move on to a conversation about Diddy. If Celeste had been your client, if her family were your client right now, or your daughter, what would you be demanding right now of this investigation?
Good question. I would be demanding that all search warrants that can lawfully be issued for the premises where David was staying, for his digital devices, for Celeste's digital devices. On top of that, my understanding is a lot of Teslas maintain digital data that can show when a vehicle was unlocked, when a vehicle was moving, when it was parked, that kind of thing. On top of that, investigation into all of Celeste's friends. Certainly they need to investigate David and his his team. But Celeste Friends, that's who people, 17-year-olds or whatever, young people confide in their friends like that. I would make sure that all of that investigation was happening. And if it wasn't, I would have my own team with their private investigators uncovering everything they could possibly uncover. And to make sure this is a diligent and comprehensive investigation and see if any answers can be gleaned.
Hopefully they'll we'll find out some information soon. And hopefully for those who did care about her, they will get that that information as well. Let us know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube if that's where you are watching us. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage on this case.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
At McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.